Hello and welcome to another episode of the World Athletics Podcast. Today's guest is Australian distance runner Jessica Hole. She reflects on an amazing 2020 season, breaking Australian records over 1500 and 5000 metres, and looks ahead to next year's Olympics in Tokyo and returning to Oregon for the World Championships in 2022. Jess, 2020 has been a crazy year for everybody, but particularly you. You've had a really strong year on the track, arguably your best year to date, whilst also dealing with a global pandemic. How could you sum up this year?
I think the way to sum up this year is just crazy. It's so simple in a way, considering what's been going on, but everything just changed all the time, basically. Even since we've came over to Europe, like, the initial mapped out plan, you just have to adjust and be adaptable and all those kinds of things along the way. So I think we haven't been able to get very comfortable this year. So maybe the mantra has been getting comfortable being uncomfortable in different situations and changing and not as much consistency as we might be used to in our external environments.
I quite like that, getting comfortable being uncomfortable. It's a good mantra. You started off the year really strongly indoors. You actually set an indoor Australian 1500 metre record. Did you see that coming?
No, I didn't. I really, going into the Boston meet, I was really unsure of what to expect because it had been, I'd done a little mile in December at home, kind of coming off the first kind of 6 weeks after Doha, and it hadn't gone very well. So I wasn't really sure how I was going to go coming indoors, but I'd spent a month with my team up in Phoenix. And I think just being back in that environment and getting the solid training and ready to hit the track again. And Pete was so big on us keeping that weekend just fun. He knew that this meet was a small meet, but it had a reputation of being a very fun meet for those that get to participate in it. So that was kind of, we kept it really light, and yeah, I was able to put together a 404 back in January. Yeah.
You had a fairly short indoor season because you went back to Australia and you ended up actually being locked down in Australia. I mean, it's a whole country, not, I mean, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
How was it? What was it like being back in Australia? Because currently you're based in the US. So was it nice to spend time being back at home again?
Yeah, it was definitely, there was two sides to it. It was great to be home and be with my family throughout the whole lockdown procedure. I think that was probably the best thing for me, considering we did end up locked down for so long. From a training standpoint, it's definitely different not being around your team every day. But I was very lucky that I had the young guys from the NCA system who had to come home as well were around where I live most of the time that I was, especially once we got back into key workouts. And it was great to kind of see the community help me get to like the opportunity to compete overseas this summer. So I had a great team of young guys and then my dad that were overseeing everything that Pete sent through and made sure I was taking care of business, but also at the same time enjoying being at home for the longest stretch I have been since 2015 when I went to the University of Oregon.
Well, everybody was talking about that quite a lot in lockdown, is that kind of community spirit and all kind of coming together and supporting one another. How was it just having everybody around you all supporting each other throughout that really difficult period?
It was great. It kind of kept the similar sense of normality to what you're used to, especially distance runners. Like, we have such a great connection amongst each other. I feel like no matter, you're always excited to see somebody's result, no matter like whether they're finished ahead of you or they've taken a huge chunk off their PR. Like, I get very excited by other people's achievements as well, and I think being able to involve other people in the process, it just makes it all that more enjoyable. So having like a sense of track and field community consistent wherever I am in the world, whether it's my current teammates or local athletes as well, or my former teammates, it's just a pretty special connection, and it made the consistency of our training environment that you were striving for amongst all the chaos of coronavirus definitely made a huge difference in getting through my training preparations.
Obviously, you got to return back to Australia, which was nice for you to kind of reconnect with the country. But rewinding time a little bit, growing up in Australia as a young girl, how did you find that? How was your experience?
Yeah, I loved it. I have very fond memories of my juniors, basically through including my high school days, on the track, at school, all of it. I think it was a great place to have grown up, and I love going back there every time I get the chance to. It's when you've been away and you come home, you appreciate things a little more. So I think even just going back to when I go home, simple things are like, I've lived so close to the beach my whole life, but it looks even more beautiful every time you get home because you don't see it every day now. I think that it was the great place to be for my whole juniors, and maybe I'll end up back there again eventually. I think Mum and Dad would like to hear that, but I'm not too sure. I'm pretty comfortable bouncing from continent to continent right now.
And how did you find running? Were your family particularly sporty?
Yeah, my dad was a runner himself back when he was through to about age 15, and then he went and played football. But he was an 800, 1500 runner himself. He had a lot more speed than me. He was 800 side of the 15. And he coached me through high school. So we have a pretty special father-daughter bond, as well as he's a great coaching figure that continues to have an influence today. I think it's just when I know he believes that I can do something, he's not just saying that because he's dad and he should. He's saying it because he understands and he knows that he wants it just as much as I do, in the best way possible. So that's pretty special.
Did either of you expect, like, in your high school years, that you would be as successful as a professional athlete that you are?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think I had the dream of representing Australia, and at the top of that is you want to be an Olympian, but there is a sense of naivety when you're 13, 14 that you think like, oh, I want to be an Olympian, so it's going to happen one day. I think until you kind of get to your early 20s or late teens, it then does become like the reality of it sets in of like, this is really hard and I want to be an Olympian, and it doesn't just happen because I willed it to myself when I was 13. So I think along the way, I've always like wanted to get there. And one of my former teammates from Oregon reminded me when we got selected a few weeks ago, she sent me a message on Instagram and she said, like, I remember you telling me when you were a freshman, like, you were going to make the Olympic team. And I didn't remember telling her that, but it had stood out to her. So I think the dream never wavered for me, but I think the actual belief was from Dad. Like, he had, when he coached me, we never overstretched and we never overreached. We did everything very progressively, and even he had a sheet of paper written out with like a 1%, he figured out some equation from when I was like 15 to 16 and I'd improved by 1% across all the event, like 8, 15, 3K that I ran at that point in time. And he'd written out this like progression of if I continued to improve by 1% each year, what I could eventually get down to in my late 20s when women peak. So I think when he didn't have any sort of disbelief that it wasn't going to happen, he was just a big advocate for, if I work hard and I continue to enjoy it and I love what I do, then like I cannot put a limit on myself. So I think we both had the goal. I think his was a little firmer in belief and mine was a little more of like, oh, like maybe it will happen.
So obviously your dad was a really big part of you as a professional runner now. Did you have any other inspirations growing up?
So I think growing up was in Australia and being from the local area, Karen McCann was our running hero in the community. And she had won the 2006 Commonwealth Games at home. And I just remember that the last 300 metres when she was battling with the Kenyan, it was just so impressive to watch the grit that she had. And she'd tried to shake the Kenyan for the last 2 kilometres or so. And they'd come into the stadium together, and then the uproar of the crowd was just like a moment that I don't think I'll ever forget. And I think watching her do that, it was like, okay, I want to do that too one day. Maybe not in the marathon, but I definitely want to experience that one day down the track. So she probably kick-started everything, and then because we had the local Wollongong connection, it was like even more powerful to me. And then I've been reminiscing the last kind of few weeks on the old Diamond League circuit of like who I used to watch racing, and now I'm lucky enough to be teammates with Shannon, and like watching her and Jenny and the the generation of distance runners before me that used to race in these Diamond League events, and now I get the chance to race with them. It's kind of crazy to sort of see that I used to put these runners in this in a box and be like, they're so special and so talented, and now I've got the opportunity to be out there, and maybe there's some young girls and young guys watching me like I used to watch Jenny and Shannon, and I hope that it's inspiring those that come through, like Karen and all the women that inspired me did.
So obviously you're now kind of living your dream from what you were thinking about in high school and as a junior athlete. But it all kind of started off when you were competing at World Juniors in 2014 in Oregon. What was that like? Because that was like your first senior, first junior international championships.
Yeah, that was an incredible experience. I think that whole meet in general was just amazing. From, if you look back at the results, like every event was just so highly talented and special that it was a great experience and great exposure to what it takes to be on that stage. And our Australian team looked after us so, so well. Like, we had every opportunity we could possibly need to be ready to perform on the day. And it was, to this day, our most successful junior team. So we had athletes like Cedric Dubois and Matt Denny. And Cedric had won the silver. Georgia Wassell got a bronze in the 800. And then Georgia Griffith got fourth in the 800. And our distance crew themselves had done so well. And it kind of, I think that was my first experience of what being a part of a team and a strong and successful team can do to your own performance, because everyone around me was doing so well that you kind of took confidence from that. It was like, well, yeah, our national championships might have been back in March, but it seems to be that all of our coaching staff and the support staff have helped our personal coaches get this right. And it was kind of pretty powerful to get out there. I think I was day three after, or no, I must have been day four after some pretty impressive performances, and just standing there feeling like, how good is this that I get to be here and I know I'm ready to go. So it was the most nervous I've ever been. I think I almost was crying walking around to the 3,000 metre start line, but the experience was so invaluable, and just the place of Oregon has become so special to me. And I think 2014 World Juniors kickstarted that, and maybe when we get back there in 2022 now for the World Champs, it's going to be kind of a full circle moment.
So that kind of World Juniors experience very much started your love affair with Oregon, because you then went on to go to university there in 2015. What was that decision, or what brought you to that decision?
So coming out of high school, I had a couple of options for the US, and at that point in time, I wasn't ready to be away from home. So I was probably way too hesitant to commit to it. I think looking back now, like, I don't know why it took me a little bit of time to make the jump. So I started university at home just part-time. I was taking two subjects at the University of Wollongong, and at that point I had made the World Cross Country team for the junior women's race, and I kind of very quickly realised that it wasn't going to be possible to combine competing at the level I wanted to be with university at home, when there just wasn't a correlation between, it wasn't a university sport, and we didn't really have the club teams or anything that, even if you're not on the main team at the University of Oregon or any NCAA team, there's a club team. We didn't have that in Australia, and it was quickly showed that it wasn't going to be possible to combine the two based on just a misunderstanding between professors and teachers, as to I wasn't just going to China for a holiday, I wasn't just missing my exam because I was deciding to go to China for the weekend. Like, I was going because of the World Cross Country Championships. So that kind of just opened my eyes that it was going to be very tricky logistically if I did stay in Australia, whereas if I went over and I tried the NCAA, everything was going to be streamlined, and they cared about me as a student and as an athlete, and they were going to make sure I could be successful in both areas if I was willing to work hard.
And what was it like actually making that move from Australia to the US, almost culturally?
Yeah, I think culturally from where I grew up in Albion Park and then going into Eugene, Oregon, personalities are very different. Eugene is so laid back and peaceful. But in terms of the scenery, like it was very similar, like it's similar to what I was used to. Lots of greenery, a little bit of rain. We don't get as much rain in Albion Park, Australia, but I wasn't totally unfamiliar with those kinds of weather patterns. And just the things that needed to be consistent were like it wasn't too much of a culture shock. The girls were lovely. They were so welcoming. So, and my coach was like a mother figure outside of Australia. I know once Mum met Marisa, she was so comfortable with me being over there and being so far away from home, knowing that I was going to be looked after. So the pieces that needed to be familiar were, and it was able to make the transition as simple as possible to being away from home. You still had to get used to the fact that Mum's no longer there to have dinner and take care of the little things that you don't realise take so much time once you have to do them yourself. So getting used to being out of home was probably the more of the shock than being used to being so like in a different place. Yeah, it wasn't too culturally different.
And as an athlete, as a student athlete, you were a pretty successful one, especially in America, which is the most competitive student athlete track and field league in the world. You got 4 NCAA titles, I think.
Two DMRs and then 2 individuals. Yeah.
For our viewers who don't know much about the NCAAs, can you sum it up?
Well, so I would say the NCAA is almost... it would be maybe 1% of a fraction less competitive than the world championships, if that. It could be in some events it may be more competitive. Just the depth as well too. We are given every opportunity to perform well too, like with the resources that we had at the University of Oregon. Like you are essentially a professional athlete who goes to school as well. They do everything possible to make sure we're prepared for whether that's finishing high or running fast or jumping far. Like they do everything to give us the best opportunity, and it's if you grab it with 2 hands, there's a lot that you can take from it. But yeah, the NCAA itself is super competitive, and I think the depth of the women, especially in the distance, it's taught me a lot going on to the world stage now. Like I think my racing tactics and my racecraft has come a long way just purely because I was so used to being in races where I was crowded and it wasn't a matter of there's 1 or 2 people clearing out. Like every race was always like 9, 10 women deep that really could all be there at least at the bell and then possibly still with 200 to go. You just learn so much from that style of racing.
Was there a particular NCAA title that means the most to you?
2018, the 1500 outdoor title on Hayward Field. I'll never forget that one. That was pretty incredible too. I think I'd had a lot of fun that year with my coach and my teammates who were my training partners and just went in with this total attitude of like I can win this and I'm going to put myself in it. And if I don't, then I'm still going to be so happy with the result because it was a big step forward that year. I think Marisa she told me after Nationals that she had told her husband Andy, who also coached with us, that if I didn't win after the Pac-12 meet, she'd said if I didn't win at Hayward Field, then Marisa had somehow miscalculated my taper. So she was so confident in my ability that she was like, okay, it's up to me to get it right now. To win on Hayward in front of a home crowd. And I also had my parents and both of my nanas were able to come over for the meet. Being able to do that and then have the victory lap on Hayward with my teammates because they were there because it was in Eugene. It's just being able to share the result, I think, makes it way more memorable than if it just had have been myself and possibly just Marisa at a different track somewhere else in the country. But being on Hayward was just that extra special magic for the day that will never leave us.
That's amazing. You kind of spoke about your coach again having such a belief in you, kind of similar to your dad, like believing in your own results almost more than you do. How important is that as an athlete to have a coach who has so much belief in you?
Yeah, it's super powerful, especially like they are the ones that they groom you to be ready. And when they have confidence in what you've been doing, and I mean, Pete as well, it's like they have seen so many athletes pave their pathways and had an influence on what they've done in training. And then when they turn around and say, you know, you're capable of doing this, it's very inspiring. And it's at the same time, it's a little nerve-wracking, because sometimes I don't believe it until I've done it myself, or until I've seen it. There's a bit of that there, but I think having them have so much confidence and faith in me, it's definitely a great thing to stand on the start line with. It doesn't really give you an option not to bring out the best in yourself, because you think if they invest in me so highly and they believe that I can do it, like, well, I want to do it for them now. So it takes it away from just being all about yourself when you're standing out there.
Going forward into 2019, you were still in the NCAA setup and you came second in 2019?
Yeah, yep.
Yeah, it wasn't a really close race, like on the finish line sort of situation.
Yeah. Sinclair had a great last straightaway. She ran a perfect race, and she made the most of that last 50 meters.
What's quite incredible for your 2019 season is that the NCAA athletes, you guys slog it out doing so many different races all around the country, or from January all the way through to June. It's super hectic, yet you still managed to make it to the World Championships in Doha in October. What was that year like for you?
Oh, I think especially now when you look at this year, we haven't competed anywhere near as much. So that's kind of a shock to the system. But Doha was, and Pete summed it up perfectly, is like, for so long I was just riding this high of, oh wow, this is so new, this is exciting. I signed with Nike, I joined Pete, I had a new training group, I went to altitude for the first time, I raced my first Diamond League races. Like, I just kept going on this momentum of everything was new, and I was just having so much fun that I think it kept everything fresh, so that I did get to Doha and I could still perform. I do kind of think if I had stayed in my same setting and then stretched it out to Doha, maybe that 3 month period from NCAAs to Doha would have felt a lot longer. But having everything be so different and just getting used to transitioning to being a professional athlete and everything that entails, was the time just went by so fast. It felt like we got to October and we were in Doha, and it was like, wow, like we're here. Like, this is time to make the most of it. And it was incredible to prepare. And we went up to St. Moritz and we prepared from there. And like, just all of those places I've never been before. I hadn't been to Europe prior to the season. So everything was just a whole lot of fun. And I enjoyed getting to know my new teammates and my new coach. And it just kept it exactly where it needed to be for 2019, considering it was such a long year.
And how did you find being on the international circuit, racing against the best athletes in the world in these amazing capital cities? What was that like?
Yeah, it still blows my mind that I get to do this as my job, I guess. I have always catch myself having a few runs, every few runs I kind of catch myself being like, wow, I get to do this. And I think last year was each year is going to be different, but last year was definitely a matter of like, wow, like I'm just going to see what I can do, because there's no expectations on me right now and there's no pressure. And the same thing this year is, it's kind of just been about like, okay, like I get to be here, so what can I do? And I'm excited to see how that evolves over time, like where there starts to be a shift in, I'll start to have expectations on myself going into these races. So for right now, I feel like we're progressively getting used to them, so that as I get stronger and as I get fitter, and the mental side will start to match up with the physical side, it'll be exciting to sort of see how that evolves.
And you kind of mentioned in Eugene having that, or with the World Under 20s in 2014, having that kind of team mentality going into the championships. Did you kind of feel that the same with Doha, but with your training partners? Because a lot of your training partners were super successful in Doha as well.
Yeah, 100%. And it's the same. I had it at NCAA level in the Oregon Duck team, but it is powerful. And when you see a teammate nail it, like Donovan, he was the first of us to kind of have his final, and when he goes out there and wins, it's like, well, okay, well, we're all ready. There's no doubt about it now. And it's the same on like this season. There's been a few meets where we've kind of all raced within 1 to 2 hours of each other. And you don't want to say it to the person who goes off first because it's extra pressure, but there is a momentum swing. And I know that I personally respond really well to it is when I know that the people that raced before me that I train with every day, they went out there and they did something special. They got it right for themselves that day. I stand there and I'm like, okay, well, we're ready to go. Definitely in Stockholm because Donovan had run the 800 right before I was walking to the call room and I hadn't seen his result. And so when you're walking to the call room and you've got those pre-race jitters and I was a little bit like, oh, wow, like, I don't know how this is going to go today. But then I caught Pete on the way to the call room and I just said, how did Don go? And when he told me that he absolutely nailed it and rocked the last straightaway, I was like, it's such a different, you just get this whole sense of, okay, I can do it too now. Like once you know the momentum is there, it's like pretty powerful to carry forward through whether it's a championship and rounds or just for the one day meet itself. It's something that I don't know that you get to experience if you're just totally individualistic. Being part of a team is much more stronger.
You mentioned that when you were on the start line in 2014 that you were almost in tears because you were so nervous. How did that compare to your first senior world championships?
I think it was pretty similar in Doha. Like I was more nervous for the first round just because I knew that I should progress. So I think that was an internal pressure of like a little bit like, okay, this is your first time, but it's also you have a job to do. But by the time we got through the call room and it beat it to Doha in that the crowd wasn't massive on the day of my first round was I came out of the tunnel from the warm-up at the call room area to run around to the straightaway and I actually heard my parents because they came over to Doha and being able to hear them say like, let's go, you've got it. I was just like, okay, that's right, like we can do this. And then familiarity from 2014, Cedric Dubler was out there on the back straight in the midst of the long jump for the decathlon when we were out there getting ready to line up for the 1500. So he was just even just like a very quick word from him of like, go Jess, was just like the recentering that I needed to be able to be composed and not be freaked out, especially when the first 800 meters of our race was a little bit slower than I was expecting. I was, I think if I hadn't had those few little pointers on the way out there, I may have been a little bit more antsy when I didn't think the race was going quite to my strength. So those things just really ground you and it's important to look for consistency amongst things that are brand new and not get too stressed about the things that you don't know how they're going to unfold.
You mentioned Stockholm Diamond League this year and being on the circuit this year. How has things compared from this year to 2019?
Yeah, I think, the meets themselves have been equally as incredible as they are every year. The meet directors, Monaco was just amazing. And I think to sort of see how these meet directors are working to keep the events possible with such and have safety precautions and everything that they need in place to make sure that they can still hold them. We as athletes, I think the only thing that we don't even notice when we're racing because they've done such a good job with the crowd noise as well. It really does feel like the stadiums are full. I think that that's probably the biggest difference is not being able to have people in the stands or to the capacity that they're used to. But in terms of being an athlete on the circuit, I have to applaud every single person that's involved in making these meets go ahead because it doesn't feel foreign at all. It feels very normal and I think that a lot of us appreciate that is that in times of a lot of change, we can get out there and race on race day and it just feels totally natural.
You mentioned Monaco there, which is actually where you broke your 5,000 meter record, the Australian record. What was that like for you?
That was awesome. I don't know that there's really a word to kind of sum it all up, but just to be out there and kind of also just, I had also been waiting for so long for a 5K that I got into that I felt like I was very like I got the most out of myself. I think the few times I had run the 5 prior to this I'd been very conservative and been on the safer side of redlining whereas I knew going into Monaco I was just gonna have to run as hard as I could for a very long time and the growing up and watching the Monaco meet on the TV and sort of seeing Ryan Gregson break the national record in the 1500 10 years ago now, it had always, like, while I hadn't been there myself, it had been a place that I also had kind of alluded to being this very special place where if you go there and you race, all the magic just comes together. So I think that combined with just like a little bit of ignorance as bliss in terms of what I was getting into based on the pace was just such a recipe to have such a good day and then to be able to run with Shannon the whole way and then have Genevieve Gregson in the race as well, who knew what it meant to break an Aussie record, was just all the pieces were there to make it a very memorable day.
And then you went and did it again in Berlin, I think, where you set the 1500 meter record as well.
Yes, which I think I had raced at ISAF last year in 2019. I ran my first real 5K there. And I think that stadium is possibly the reason why I enjoyed the 5K and had a positive experience with it, was because it was just like, this is amazing. Like, we get to travel and we get to race in these stadiums all around the world. And at last year's ISTAF, the crowd was phenomenal because they were allowed to have so many people pre-pandemic. So that was such a positive experience. And I had said after that meet last year, just based another again, based on how they organize it and they make this, the whole weekend is just totally about the athletes and making sure that we have opportunity to enjoy ourselves and get out there and perform. I sort of thought to myself, I really want to come back to this meet every time I can, and for it to present itself this year and be able to run the 1500 there, I was so excited because I knew if I could do my part, then the other pieces are going to be in place and I could possibly run very fast.
Obviously, you ran super close to sub 4 minutes. Is that maybe a target for next season?
Yeah. I won't run another 1500 this season now, but I think it's going to be the fuel that burns throughout my fall training and my winter training. I would have loved to have run sub 4 on Sunday, but now I've got that fire for me to get through the next lot of training once we wrap up this season. Is I still haven't broken 4, so everything I do will be extremely purposeful.
With the Olympics obviously being postponed, it's kind of thrown a lot of spanners in the works for lots of people's plans. How are you feeling about the Olympics potentially happening next summer?
Yeah, I feel very optimistic right now that they're going to go ahead. Whether what that looks like, that we'll know that closer to the date. But I think if they had have gone ahead this year, we would have been really ready to go around the time, because that was 2 weeks after the program. Well, about a week after the program was when we all raced in Monaco, and I think that kind of showed that we were in very good form for that time of the year. And I imagine if we had been ready for an Olympics, we would have been possibly in even better form. But it's confidence to know that that's the kind of shape we got into this year, and the experience that I've gained from an extra year racing on the circuit, and even especially in the 1500, was my takeaway was I have only really been in a handful of races that are under 4:05 type races. So my kind of thing was the more exposure I can get to any style of race this year, whether it's 3:57, both times I've raced Laura Mueller, she's run 3:57, or then I did a smaller meet in Sweden and it was a 4:05 race, but they're all just as purposeful for me at this stage in my career. And I think being able to get that extra year under my belt and go into the Olympics now, having a full European season behind me in an altered capacity, but still a lot of experience, is going to be very valuable for Tokyo 2021. And it'll be extremely special to get out there. I'm sure we're going to savour it a lot more than possibly we would have this year if it was just going as normal. So it'll just make the moment even more bigger and special than it can be, considering it's an Olympics.
Something that has potentially a bit more certainty is Oregon 2022, which you've kind of spoken about, your affinity with Oregon, this kind of love affair of your athletics career there. What would that be like to compete back in Eugene again?
I can't wait to be back in Eugene in 2022. That's the goal. And I think that I really hope the program allows for me to run 1500 and 5K in 2022. I think being able to do a lot of as much racing as I can on Hayward Field in front of the Hayward Field fan. It's just such a special place for track and field athletes, and I hope that having been a Duck, it's going to be an extra special homecoming, and I will take every step I can on that track during the program. So I'm hoping that there's a double possible in 2022.
Do you have a favorite out of the 5K and 15?
I don't know if I have a favorite. I have a safety blanket, I guess. The 1500 is more of my comfort zone. I know how to race the different kinds of 1500s a little bit more naturally, I would say. And there's a little less doubt in the 1500. I don't really have the chance to think to myself too much through it, like, oh gosh, I've gone out way too hard, what's going to happen? Whereas in the 5K, there's a long time to think. So for now, I would say the 15 is my favorite, but I am really enjoying getting to know the 5K. And I think eventually, I love the sport so much that I know that to stay in it for a long time, maybe I'll progress up through the distances, and that's exciting. But for right now, the 1500 is still my favorite.
Okay, maybe the marathon one day then.
Maybe one day. I mean, there is talk that Australia may bid for, I think it's the 2036 Olympics. And I was like, well, if we're going to have them, I've got to have home games in my career somewhere. So by that point, the marathon may be my only option. If I can. I don't know that my 1500 speed will hang on till 2036.
Sounds good. Okay, well, thank you so much for coming on the What Athletics podcast, and best of luck with the rest of your season.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on. It's been a lot of fun.
That's the end of this episode of the World Athletics podcast. Thank you so much for listening.